fantastic.
When you sell more new Nissans, the factory keeps sending them. So we have all the selection you need and more on the way. No matter where you've been or what you've been offered, you won't do better than a Formula Nissan deal right now.
Straightforward, simple factory direct pricing and huge Nissan Now sale event savings make now the best time to drive a new Nissan at Formula Nissan.
We're on the Ferry Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut and at FormulaNissan.com. Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. It's Friday. Thanks for joining us on the program. We're broadcasting as we do on Fridays from the State House of Montpelier. That's during the legislative session. Take the summer off. We broadcast on Friday, but not at the State House. Coming up on the program today, we're going to be talking about a lot of money issues. It has been a huge week here at the legislature. The tax writing committees have been working hard. The budget writing committees have been working hard. We got a great lineup. In a moment here, we'll talk with the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. That's the committee in charge of raising money. Later this hour, we'll talk with Senator Joe Benning. He's the Republican minority leader over on the Senate side. Governor Shumlin joins us next hour. And also Janet Ansel's counterpart in the Senate, Senator Tim Ash, will join us coming up at about 10:30 this morning. We would welcome your phone calls. We encourage you, in fact, to call us. This is a golden opportunity for you to talk to some of the key lawmakers down here. And it's one phone call away. You can reach us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And toll-free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. Let's give a nice home radio Vermont welcome this morning to Representative Janet Ansel, who is the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. Wow, what a year. Thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm fine, and I'm happy to join you this morning. You've got quite a lineup.
So how many years have you been chair of this committee?
This is my third term, so it's my fifth year.
Tell me how this year is different than others.
Well, this year, one of the things that happened is that we sort of divided up the property tax, education, finance issues so that the education committee is taking the lead on it. That actually relieves some of the work in my committee. But we did that because we knew that there were going to be some big money issues coming to the committee. Those are the clean water bill, the lake bill, the health care bill, which we have in the committee but haven't really taken up yet, and the money that we need to resolve the budget. We knew going into the session that we were going to have a significant budget gap and that revenue would likely be part of the solution to that. And so the committee has had a lot of work to do. We've been sort of waiting through a lot of the session for these bills to come. Mm-hmm. And so we've been spending our time, and working really hard, but spending our time sort of getting background information, getting really familiar with the issues that we know we're going to have to deal with. So this last week, including today, has been particularly busy in that we got the education bill out yesterday with the property tax rates, and we got the water bill out, I think, 2 days ago. And we will likely be voting on a revenue package for the budget later today.
So let's see if we can split these up and not confuse everybody. In fact, let's sort of pick off the lake bill that you, and I think it was actually yesterday, but I'm sure the days are blending pretty heavily for you here. Oh. So you're going to raise about $8 million. Yeah. Dollars. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's the blend.
I don't know.
You're going to raise about $8 million. Yeah. Dollars through an increase in the property transfer tax, which is interesting because this bill, as it was progressing through the legislature, had other funding sources, and then this one seemed to kind of come out of left field. So what's the story behind the story on this?
So we started the session with a conversation about cleaning the lake, and not just Lake Champlain, but other fragile waterways in the state. So it's really a statewide problem, not just a Lake Champlain problem. I think I never heard anybody in the State House say that they didn't want to do that. I think there has been a really strong commitment to figuring out a way to do that. But nobody could figure out how to fund it. And we had, by the time the bill got to our committee, I think we had I don't know what the list was, maybe 15, 20 different possible revenue sources that have been kind of put out there, and either by different committees or outside the committee process, all of which, you know, were possible ways of funding this Clean Water Fund. There's really two funding needs in the bill. There are fee increases that are funding staffing in the Agency of Agriculture and Department of Environmental Conservation. Those I see a little bit separate. We did go with fees to raise that money, and that's, I think the total was about probably about $3 million or so, maybe a little less, maybe about $2 million, I guess is right. And so those fees we reduced a bit from the version that we got. We reduced the funding a little bit, but we feel pretty confident that the administration can live with those numbers. The big money was the money that's going into the Clean Water Fund, and that's where there was a lot of disagreement. And the what we ended up doing was to do a surcharge on the property transfer tax. The property transfer tax has been in place for a long, long time. The money gets allocated and it's through a fairly complicated formula right now. But we're not changing that allocation. We're not talking about the base. This is purely a surcharge. It's 0.2% on the cost of a house. It's paid by the or a property, not just a house. It's paid by the buyer, and the first 100,000 or so is exempt from the surcharge. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to make sure that we weren't impacting particularly first-time home buyers and people who are buying lower priced houses. And so we feel that we've designed it in a way that doesn't have those negative impacts. It builds on an existing tax system, so it has all the advantages. We know how to collect it. We know how to account for it. We have a pretty good idea what the revenue estimate is because we've been doing it for a long time. And the other thing I think that's positive about it is that it's paid, it's statewide. It's not focused in a particular area of the state, so you only pay it if you buy a house, and often buyers and sellers negotiate how it gets paid, but it will be paid statewide, and it raises the amount of money that the administration said they needed to raise.
And do you think it's a satisfactory amount that it's raising?
Based on what we know right now, yes. If we get to a place where the agency, and this is I think principally the Environmental Conservation Agency, but it might be either one, has a clearer estimate of what's needed, and I think some of the unknowns have to do with the work in the municipal roads in particular, we will revisit that. And so I anticipate that over the next 6 or 7 years, which is the horizon we were looking at, that there may be additional requests for funds, but based on a lot better information than we have currently. Based on what we know right now, it raises enough.
But tell me, where did this idea come from? Because the Fish and Wildlife was dealing with this bill, then went to agriculture. They had all sorts of other different funding sources. It comes to your committee, and all of a sudden there's this one.
Well, I don't really know where I heard it, but somebody mentioned it to me 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I remember thinking, gee, that may be the source that works. And so I started working with our joint fiscal staff on how to model it, and understanding a little better how it would actually work and who it would impact and how to raise the money that we needed. And so we were also at the same time working with the administration to get better figures on how much money we needed. But that was kind of wasn't as clear as it should have been at the beginning of the session. So once we narrowed down the amount of revenue needed and the source, you know, as I talked with people about it, people would say, yeah, that makes sense. Then we came up with a plan, or I basically with the staff came up with a plan to put on the table.
And the fertilizer tax is still in too, right?
The fertilizer tax that people have that's been sort of controversial is not in. There is a additional tax, a tonnage tax on fertilizer, but it's non-agricultural fertilizer. So it would be I'm not particularly expert on how fertilizer is sold, but it will end up on an additional cost on bagged fertilizer. So when you go to the Agway and you buy your bag of, I don't know what the brands are, some kind of
like Miracle-Grow?
Whatever. Okay, yeah, I don't even know if Miracle-Grow comes in a bag, but I don't buy it. But if you do, you will pay, you will see this additional cost. I think it's surprising how much non-agricultural fertilizer is sold in the state, because although this raises, you know, a fairly significant amount of money, the additional cost on a bag of fertilizer is about 85 cents. So it's not a lot of money on the purchase itself. So that's an existing tax as well. And that was a $30 a ton, excise tax. So it will be paid by the distributor and then will show up on the price of the product. But it's not the fertilizer that the farmer buys for the farming operation.
Why not tax that?
We didn't need to. We had enough money based on the fees. What we did is the Ag Committee did a lot of work trying to sort of prioritize the different agricultural fees and revenue sources that would hit farmers in particular. And we took their list and took their priorities, and we were able to raise the money that we needed for the Agency of Agriculture on that, based on that list.
Talking with Representative Janet Ansel. She's the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. Let's talk about the big budget bill here and what your committee is expected to participate in that. You're supposed to be raising about $35 million.
That's what we, so we started with the figure that the governor raised as part of his budget proposal. Raised it in a different way, but yes, $35 million.
And you're looking at going in a different direction than the administration. You're really this week looking at this idea of capping deductions on people's taxes. And the feedback that I hear on that is concern that capping that might hurt things like charitable contributions. So talk about the what's the wisdom of going and capping?
Well, let me give you a little background on it. First of all, the governor did propose making a change in the income tax, and his proposal was to get rid of the deductibility of the state income tax.
Yeah.
Right now, you can if you itemize, only 30% of Vermonters itemize, but if you itemize, you can deduct what you paid last year in the state income tax. We capped that a few years ago at $5,000 as a total, but the governor recommended getting rid of it entirely. So he did actually raise, they estimated $15.5 million. I think it's actually a million less, but raised a significant amount of money from the income tax.
Yes.
So we're agreeing with that proposal.
Mm-hmm.
To get to the $35 million, we would also cap the remaining deductions. And we've designed it in a way so it would be at 2.5 times the standard deduction. And for a married filing joint, that's about $31,000 right now. The standard deduction moves up every year. It's adjusted for inflation, or it's indexed.
Mm-hmm.
So that amount would increase every year. And if it's 2.5 times, it increases exponentially. What we wanted to do is we wanted to design something that didn't favor any particular deduction and didn't disadvantage any particular deduction. So the 2.5 times the standard deduction gives people room under that cap. Maybe they have a lot of mortgage interest, or maybe they have very high property taxes, or maybe they want to contribute, a significant amount to a nonprofit organization that they feel particularly connected with. We wanted to make room under the cap for those different choices.
Mm-hmm.
The analysis that we have from our fiscal staff is that only about 6% of filers statewide would actually hit the cap.
Okay.
Would actually be capped, be affected by it. And what's really important for people to remember that all those deductions, you still get it when you file
federal,
your federal return.
Right.
And the big money is in your federal deduction.
Right.
It's not in your state deduction anyway. So we're, this is very similar to something we passed 2 years ago that passed the House. We got a different version from the Senate. We were about to come to an agreement in the conference committee, and at the end of the session, we abandoned that effort. But it's an idea that we've been thinking about. It basically uses the principles of, that the Blue Ribbon Tax Commission developed when they did their work. And I support it strongly, and I do it because I think it makes our income tax system more fair. It makes it a bit more progressive. And I think going forward, we will have, frankly, a more stable and more fair income tax system. So I support it strongly, but I wanted to be sure that we designed it in a way that I didn't think would hurt any of those sectors.
And does it raise enough money if it's only hitting 6% of taxpayers?
It raises 32 million or 33.
That's phenomenal,
right,
isn't it? From, I mean, from
well,
six per,
so yeah. So understand that a half of that probably comes from that state and local income tax deduction.
Okay, I thought
elimination.
You were, got it.
Yeah.
Okay, I
yes.
thought you were talking
yeah.
two separate things
yeah.
here.
Well, we're combining them, but they're about half of the money comes through the eliminating the state income tax deduction.
The governor had recommended this payroll tax as a way to try to close the Medicaid the disperse or the difference between what doctors get paid Medicaid and non-Medicaid. That idea doesn't seem to have flown real well.
We've taken a lot of testimony in our committee on the payroll tax because it was one of the ideas that was put forward in the beginning of the session. And we have not taken a straw vote in our committee. I haven't polled the members. But based on conversations I've had and questions that they ask, I would say that there probably is not support in our committee at the moment. And so I think I have a lot of questions about it myself as a source of revenue, partly because it's a new tax, and if we can raise the money, so I have some questions about whether we want to, even if we're the healthcare committee reduced it, but even at that lower level, whether
right.
we really want to go down that road. There are a great many taxpayers, and the large number of taxpayers makes implementation complicated, but it also means that you're hitting a great number of people. And so I'm actually not a supporter of the payroll tax. I think I've sort of made that clear. But I don't know, because we haven't taken a vote in our committee, I can't tell you for sure what the result would be.
Okay, so what are some other options if that's rejected?
Well, the healthcare committee also put the sugar sweetened beverage tax
yep.
in as a funding source. That is actually something I've supported in the past. That also has a hard time getting 6 votes in my committee. I'm not exactly sure where we will go. But we're going to take the healthcare bill up next week. I'm trying to get these other 3 big bills out of my
right.
committee and sort of putting healthcare aside for the moment so that I can concentrate on the things I need to get done by the end of this week, and then we'll look at healthcare.
Does it make sense to separate them out like that? I mean, is that the better way to do it than kind of, I don't know, combining them all into one big revenue and not dedicating money to different places?
Well, if you took at the water bill, that bill is 133 pages long. There's
right.
a whole lot of regulatory stuff in it and new definitions and what have you. So it does make sense. That would be a separate bill, and then you really do need to fund it. So that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's also true with healthcare. There are a number of initiatives in the healthcare committee's version of the healthcare bill, and so it makes sense to me that the revenue would be part of that. And then, of course, the revenue for the budget will be its own independent bill.
Last year,
we look at them all together. I mean, we're not unaware of the impacts of what we're doing in another bill. I mean, that's the advantage of having a revenue committee, which is what Ways and Means is that we do see all the pieces at the same time.
Well, I mean, I was going to say it's like a puzzle. I mean,
yeah.
They've got to fit somehow together.
Exactly. Yeah, and you don't want to load, if you are raising revenue, you don't want to load it all on one sector. I think that's something that we're very aware of and try to avoid.
You mentioned
and so you look at all our tax sources and you things like property tax and income tax and sales tax and so on, and you want the package to be progressive, even though, for instance, the sales tax is fairly regressive, you combine it with a more progressive income tax.
What's your view of people who say there should be more taxes on the wealthy?
Well, I think that, so I'm very aware that there is a growing gap between the highest income taxpayers and the lower income taxpayers, and I think that gap is growing. That to me has more to do with making sure that we design a tax system that taxes the parts of our economy that are growing, as opposed to taxing. Sales tax is a better example of that, where we tax goods, but it's the service economy that's actually growing,
right.
So the sales tax stagnates.
Right.
I tend not to use language like let's tax the wealthy, because it's not the fact that they're wealthy that we might want to have people at the higher income levels pay more. They're not doing anything wrong. In fact, they're doing well, and they're also building businesses and employing people. So, but at the same time, you want to make sure that the tax system is still fairly distributed, and if you want it to grow at the same time as the same rate as the economy, you want it to apply to the parts of the economy that are growing.
Last question, education funding. So this week, your committee was dealing with setting the rates. But I'd like you to address more, you know, the message from town meeting was that people are very concerned about their property taxes. You mentioned at the beginning this has kind of been pushed off to the education committee, but ultimately it's going to come back to your committee.
Well,
so what's the message?
So we did vote the education bill yesterday. What we did was we did the property tax rates, and we also did, there are a couple tax incentives, a couple other smaller pieces in the bill that we did, but we did set the rates in our committee, and that was the understanding from the beginning. We were able to reduce them somewhat, but that's, people need to understand that those rates are keyed off in spending decisions. They're not, we don't set rates to raise additional money. We need to set them at a level so that we raise what the fund needs. And because school budgets came in a little bit lower and some other things broke our way in the education fund, we were able to pull those rates down a bit from what the recommendation was from the tax commissioner in the fall. And so we did that. What we spend more time talking about is which group of taxpayer, the commercial payers, the income payers, which are people under 90,000 or so,
yep,
household income, and the what we call the penny payers, but people who pay the homestead tax, sort of the allocation among those different groups. And we mm-hmm. did spend some time looking at that. I didn't answer your question. What was your question?
No,
ask me again.
No, you answered it.
Okay.
The message that town meeting voters gave you was to try to lower taxes.
Exactly.
And
I think
you answered that.
But the bill that the education committee did had other pieces to it that are focused more on lowering spending.
Right.
So that we looked at those, we took testimony on them, but we didn't vote on them one way or the other.
Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
Representative Janet Ansel is the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. They're in charge of raising revenue. We'll take a short break. Coming up next, we'll talk with the Senate Minority Leader Joe Benning. Back after this.
At the Honda Dream Garage sales event, we've got great deals on almost everything.